Welcome back to the Country House podcast. We're delighted to have a special guest with us today. Joining me and Jeff, it's Carl Ross, and he'll be helping us discuss the subject today of country house opera, a quintessentially English art form, and the amazing Neville Holt Hall, which is in the bucolic Leicestershire countryside. So welcome, Carl. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ben, and thank you, Jeff, for having me and for a rather glamorous introduction.
Could you perhaps start by describing Neville Holt Hall, painting a picture for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the heart of Neville Holt Estate is the house itself. The hall was built in around 1250 sort of time by the Bishop of Ely as his hunting lodge. And since then, over the past sort of 800 or so years, wings of the house have been added on gradually by the Neville family. And so the architecture could be described as sort of quite juxtaposed, but it's sort of, I find it quite cool when you look at it from the outside and you're wandering around the garden looking at it. And now it has sort of our family's sort of modern twist on it, which is sort of all the sculptures in the garden and also in the house as well.
It's a really interesting house from an architectural perspective, because it is such a mishmash of periods and architectural styles. It reminds me quite a lot of sort of an Oxbridge college, in the sense that it has evolved naturally over time. We've talked in past episodes about how country houses embody the sort of progression of our country through the centuries. And you see that in Neville Holt, where you've got different windows. You might have mullioned windows or sash windows, depending on the part of the house you're in, and gables and finials and all sorts of things that sort of add ornamentation and give it a really lovely silhouette against the skyline. It's quite a low facade, but very wide. So it's kind of long and thin, and that means you can really see, even from the facade, how the house has organically grown over time. And in the grounds, or next door to the house, there is the church, the parish church.
Yep, there's a church. And next to that, you'll find the stable block, which is where we've built our new theatre. But I'm sure we'll come on to that later.
Yeah, so just thinking about the history of the house for the time being. So it's been extended and expanded by the Neville family. Do you know when it passed out of the Neville family? Because I know it passed into the, I think if I remember correctly, the Neville family owned it until the 19th century, and then it was bought by the Cunard family. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
The Cunard family being the shipping family who owned the rival to the White Star Line and Titanic. And I think, if I'm right in saying, Nancy Cunard, who was the great society hostess and writer and political activist, was born in the house. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it was the Cunards, and then it became a school. And it was a school for a number of decades until
bought by your family.
Exactly.
Another famous past resident of Neville Holt was the French abbess Anne Neville, who was born in the house in 1605. So the Neville family owned the house from the 15th century all the way through till 1876. We talked in past episodes about how country houses have changed usage over time. They haven't always been family homes, and especially after the Second World War, where we saw the destruction of so many country houses, the demolition due to inheritance tax hikes, a lot of taxation on country houses, and the fall in agricultural income. We saw, as we've talked about in our past episode on the destruction of the English country house, many houses destroyed, but often those which weren't destroyed were turned into schools. And we see many of them still today, a lot of prep schools. Thinking, for example, a nearby school to Neville Holt is Maidwell Hall, which is a lovely Jacobean house that's been in the papers recently because Charles Spencer, Earl Spencer, Princess Diana's brother, was at Maidwell Hall, and he's recently written a book about his time there. But that links in quite nicely with the festival, because I believe Charles Spencer is speaking at the festival this year. Is that
he
right?
He is attending during the second week, which is the Art and Literature Week. We very much look forward to hosting him and his colleagues.
So yeah, so talking about the gradual evolution of Neville Holt Hall over the centuries, the latest incarnation of Neville Holt, apart from being the Ross family home, is the home of Neville Holt Festival, previously known as Neville Holt Opera Festival. And that's because Carl's family have sunken into the 17th century stable block a theatre or an opera house. Carl, can you talk us a little bit about that project?
So the theatre is sunken rather geniusly into what used to be a stable block, with the brains behind that project being architects Witherford, Watson, Mann. This change basically happened in 2018. So the theatre is still very, very new. Before that, it was a temporary structure that was not fit for purpose. And now we have this amazing space hidden so beautifully in the stable block, to the extent that if you walked past the theatre, you wouldn't begin to have any idea what the building was used for at all. So it is, it's a very, very clever design, but also acoustically and musically, it's the perfect space. And it seats about 400, and yeah, we're very lucky to have the space, and it's fantastic.
I think that's a helpful segue into the wider topic of Country House Opera and Country House Festivals. So what you saw at the in the sort of post-Second World War period was houses looking for other ways of utilizing their spaces. And, you know, some houses started opening to the public, others did various other things. And Glyndebourne, the Christie's family home of the auction house, of auction house fame, sort of pioneered Country House Opera, along with actually Garsington, which was held in the village of Garsington near Oxford. It's now moved to the Getty family home, Wormsley. But Garsington was pioneered by sort of people in the early 20th century, the likes of sort of the Bloomsbury Group set and various others sort of got involved with the creation of Garsington Opera at Garsington House near Oxford. And sort of Glyndebourne and Garsington pioneered the sort of country house opera scene. And it very much became part of the social calendar, the what we call the social season in the UK. So the social season runs from sort of late April through to August, and it involves all the famous events we talk about, Ascot and Henley and Wimbledon, Chelsea Flower Show. You know, the boat race and so many other things. And Country House Opera has very much become part of that social season. So if you picture yourselves, you arrive at this country house, you walk, you know, you drive up the avenue, you come out onto the front drive, you go around into the gardens. This is at all these country house opera festivals. You go around to the back of the house, and there are people in black tie and ball gowns having picnics on the grass, drinking champagne, eating strawberries. It's very idyllic. And after a little while, you get ushered into an opera house where you watch the first part of an opera. Then you might have a prolonged interval when you go out and enjoy your picnic dinner or cater dinner if there's catering facilities available. And then you go in for the second part, and then you come out, have a nightcap, and then you head on your way. And it's very much, you make a day of it. It's not just like going to the Royal Opera House in London, where you turn up maybe half an hour before and have a glass of champagne and then go in. It's very much a day, an event, part of your social life. And it's a really lovely thing. And I think what's interesting with Neville Holt that sets it apart, apart from the fact that this year they're pioneering a new festival that Carl will talk about shortly, is because this opera house is sunken into the stable block. The view from the house, the aspect from the house, is totally unspoiled. So Glyndebourne, for example, is a wonderful festival, but the opera house sits right next to the house. It's very much visible, and it's very much the key part of the house is the opera house. Same with Garsington and the Grange. And actually, what's lovely about Neville Holt is it's very discreet. It's hidden away, and that therefore, when you're not actually in the theatre, your focus is on the house, the gardens, the sculpture collection. And maybe, Carl, you can tell us a bit more about what you can find as you walk through the gardens in black tie if you're there for the opera, perhaps, or just in your regular clothes if you're there for a different event. But what you can find as you wander through the grounds.
Yeah. Well, what I think you've explained so well there is, you know, what sets the Country House Opera Day out, aside from the sort of night at the Royal Opera House, which is, you know, all the social aspect and the, you know, the fact that it's such a day out. You turn up often 3 or 4 hours before the opera even starts. You look around the gardens. As you wander around the gardens, you'll find, you know, sculptors such as Mark Quinn, Nick Fiddian Green, Alan Jones, all of their works dotted around. You know, there's plenty of opportunities to enjoy drinks and lovely food. And we at Neville Holt Festival, during the opera part of June, are very unique in that we have a very extended interval of around an hour and a half to 2 hours. So you really have an opportunity to process what you've seen in the first half of the opera, but also, you know, sit down, have a proper sit down meal if that's what you want, chat to your friends. And it's not just a, you know, out for 2 minutes, grab a drink, grab an ice cream, and then back in again. It's a much more relaxed and social process than that. And I think that's what sort of sets it apart a bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree from hearing it that seems to be the kind of feeling of detachment from the everyday days of life. It's not just about the opera, which is interesting to consider in a world that's kind of, the narrative is that the arts are struggling generally, and that we constantly hear of the state and governments having to subsidize art to be able to keep it alive. And yet with Country House Opera, we kind of have this cult following. We have it seems to be thriving even today. And I think it must be because of those extra things, the beauty of the house, the novelty of dressing up fancily and yet taking in the kind of pastoral nature while in your fancy dress, you know. It's really unique. Would you agree with that analysis, Jeff?
I think so. I think it is. It's more than a show. Whatever show you're seeing, whether, like I said, you're in black tie going for the opera, or in, you know, linen if it's a lovely hot day, which hopefully it will be, for a jazz evening or whatever it is. It's a full day event if you want to make it that. You can just go for the show. But equally, it's a proper day out, which is really special. And there is, with all these festivals, and I know with Neville Holt, there is local accommodation, local inns and pubs and cottages you can rent if you want to make a weekend of it. And the great thing about this year's festival is that because it's got such a diverse offering, you can go 2 or 3 days on the trot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And see totally different things each day. Is that fair, Carl?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how we've sort of, we've strategically tried to program it around that. So if you like opera and classical music, go for the first weekend, and I guarantee you Friday, Saturday and Sunday there will be something that you'll want to see. And if you like, you know, jazz music and, you know, more modern forms of entertainment, whether that's, you know, stand-up comedians and Edinburgh Fringe style events, then the penultimate weekend in June, we've got some, you know, fantastic performers on stage. We've got pianist Alexis French. We've got a Jane Austen inspired improvisation play called Ostentatious. We've got comedian Sean Walsh coming. We've got the Ronnie Scott's Jazz Orchestra. I'm not sure why I'm advertising them though, because we've already sold out for that one. So yeah, absolutely.
The best thing, I love the sound of Ostentatious, being a big Jane Austen reader. I think with this improvised Jane Austen show, they ask the audience for ideas on titles. And last year, one of the titles was Queer Eye for the Regency Guy, which absolutely had me in hysterics. So it's a really fun event. And in fact, I think that you've got Bounder and Cad, the musical comedy duo, performing in the chapel as well. Is that right, Carl?
Yeah, they're fantastic. Highly recommend that one. That is another sort of just very lighthearted an easygoing sort of hour of entertainment. And again, going back to the whole idea of whilst the show is an hour, there's, you know, sort of outdoor barbecues and drinks going on beforehand. And there's sort of going to be a bit of a sort of after party vibe in the garden afterwards, consisting of sort of, you know, fireplaces and drinks and some relaxed music and that sort of thing.
That's really fun. I think it'd be nice to talk a bit more now about how the festival Circuit Never Halt and the theatre plays a role within the local community and the estate, because it is a complete estate, isn't it? You've got farmland, you've got property on the estate. And there are people who live on the estate and work on the estate. And how does this festival and how does it fit within your role as stewards and custodians of this historic place and your role within village life?
Yeah, you're right. So the estate is, of course, at the heart of it is the house. But then there's bits of it used for farming, bits of it used for field sports, and bits of it, you know, there's a model farm where children that attend the academies of the David Ross Education Trust can come and learn about farming and agriculture and why that's so important in our area and across the UK as a whole. You know, whilst the house is our family home, my favorite time of year is the month of June when we get to open it up to our neighbors and to the public and to our communities, because that's what brings country houses like this and gardens like this alive. And it's when they thrive and it's when they're at their best. And it's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's when our country is at its best. It's, you know, when summer comes around and everyone's out and about doing sort of all these amazing things.
Yeah, I think it's really lovely. You mentioned the David Ross Educational Trust and how you get local school children involved with the model farm and also with the festival. And I think that links nicely with what we talked about in past episodes about the role of people who live in these grand houses and estates in giving back to the local community. So we've talked in past episodes about estate villages, for example, and how the Lord of the Manor or whoever that might be would build estate schools for the villagers' children. They would build cottage hospitals. They would have almshouses for the poorest in society. And it's lovely with your family, Carl, having acquired this property in the last 30 years, that you've sort of approaching that role with a more contemporary twist by getting local school children involved with the festivals and the farming. I think that's a really lovely example of stewardship in action. It's really exciting to see estates that have been brought back to life as Neville Holt has, with that mindset of giving back to the local community. And Carl, I mean, when your family purchased the house, it was in pretty bad nick, wasn't it? And the estate had been broken up.
It was very much unlivable, very much unlivable. But over, you know, a lot of time and a lot of love, it's now where I call home, and it's where I've grown up, and it's where, you know, my brother's growing up and all of this. And yeah, it's taken years, but it's, you know, it's now where I call home. And going back to what you were mentioning about giving back to local communities and why that's important. And no, it's not just the model farm, because within the festival itself, we are now able to lead a music education program within the state sector that allows kids at academies to come and watch dress rehearsals, perform their own productions that they would perform at school on the stage in the theatre. They received mentoring from a lot of the professional musicians that work for us, and even some of the most noteworthy and eldest singers across the academies have been casted in historic opera productions, both, you know, in solo roles and as part of the children's chorus. So, you know, it just, yeah, it's really good and important that we're able to provide those sorts of opportunities.
I know Neville Holt has kind of got the festival has got quite a reputation for championing young artists and up and coming, which I think is really great. And I wonder too, you alluded to motivations for starting the festival near the start of the episode. But I wondered, is there a specific heritage of arts within Neville Holt's history that may have also contributed to specifically doing this kind of venture with it?
Yeah, well, I think the reason we've sort of broadened our program to this extent is whilst opera is amazing and we love it and it's the heart of what we do, it's not so accessible for everyone, you know, within our immediate area and in other areas as well. You know, spending £150 on an opera ticket is not exactly a luxury that everyone has by any means. And so that's why now, this year, tickets into the garden start from £5 and you can watch brass bands in the garden and other bits and bobs. And that is, I think, a really good step in the right direction. And, you know, part of our process of listening to exactly what it is our audience want and, you know, tailoring what we put on stage based on what the demand is.
Was the traditional Country House Opera Festival known to be quite exclusive and for the upper echelons of society? Was it quite accessible except for, say, you know, more for people who were interested in opera and willing to pay a ticket for that rather than exclusive to high society?
I mean, the opera was, it was open for everyone. Whoever wants to come can come. But the other problem with opera, just aside from sort of the, you know, the demographic that's typically associated with it and the price and all this, that, and the other, is the fact that opera is often in another language and often, you know, a number of hours long. And people don't often want to just turn up to events like that not knowing much about music themselves. You know, people would often feel as though they couldn't come to the opera unless they'd studied about it beforehand or knew exactly the plot or knew exactly what was going on. And, you know, most people don't even know that there's a translation board above the stage. A lot of people just didn't find it accessible because it is, I don't know, it's people often associate it with being quite an intense activity when it's not like that at all.
That's so true, Carl. I mean, I can empathize with that. As someone who didn't grow up going to the opera that often, and having lots of friends who've never gone to the opera, it does have an air of exclusivity about it, even though it's not. And opera across the board has tried to become more accessible. And there are some great programs. For example, all these opera festivals have in recent years introduced different tiers of membership, including a young people's membership. So I believe Neville Holt has an under 35s membership, which offers extremely reasonable tickets for under 35s. So I'm a member of the Neville Holt under 35s circle, and it's brilliant because it's £35 a year membership. You can get tickets to the opera for £35. You can pick up to 4 tickets for other under 35s who want to join me. You get access to special socials in London and various other events. So it's incredibly accessible. And you think how much you always imagine these operas to be out of your reach, but actually all these opera festivals have gone to real lengths to try and make it more accessible. The problem, I guess, is reaching the audience and explaining to them that it's a very accessible thing. So people still, because they picture the likes of Glyndebourne, Garsington, The Grange, and Neville Holt as these people, as these festivals where you're in black tie, you're drinking champagne, you've got to get there, which is hard enough in itself at these rural country houses. And then, yes, like Carl said, you're listening to an opera in Italian or French without realizing there are surtitles above the stage. So it's got an air, and I think the media doesn't help, because when you watch movies, it's always the grandest people who go to the opera in their pearls and their black tie. When actually now, you know, I've been going to the Royal Opera House for 20 years, and now when I go to the Royal Opera House, even for an opening night opera, there are many people not dressed particularly smartly because it's much more open to anyone. But I think what's lovely about Neville Holt, apart from having these different tiers of membership, including the under 35s, is the accessibility of the program this year. So having this variety of very different people doing very different shows within the setting. And I talk about inaccessibility. Actually, Neville Holt is very accessible from London, isn't it, Carl?
Yeah, 55 minutes on the train from St. Pancras. followed by a 10-minute taxi. It is a route that I end up doing almost daily at times. So it's very, very accessible. Really exciting that we're now able to offer these sorts of deals for young people and have memberships like this, because I really, really love the idea of lots more young people coming to see what we have on stage.
Carl, much of the Country House Opera Festivals are very much kind of, and what I love about it is opening the doors of the family home and welcoming in the community, as you both mentioned earlier. And I wondered, following on from that, how much of it, the running of the festival, is still a family affair? Do you get stuck in at the festival?
Yeah, I love getting stuck in. I've sort of delved into every aspect of it, in that I've been on stage in the children's chorus a number of years. I've worked in the restaurant. I've been a waiter. I've been front of house. I've been one of those guys that carries your picnic from your car into your picnic spot. I've done the lot, and I love it. And I love getting stuck in, meeting our audience, meeting everyone who's there. And also, you know, when the opera and the festival finishes in June, I imagine in July and August, I'll be emailing in all my suggestions for next year. So it's very much a group effort. And whilst the family have a part to play, it is very, very much a team. This festival is able to happen due to an extraordinary group of directors. And we've got James Dacre as our guest. He's in charge of the program this year. We have got Finian Downey Dear as the conductor for the Magic Flute. By no means can I take much credit.
It's also, there are also lots of people who are involved in a volunteer capacity as well, which is lovely. And I know, because I've met a lady who lives in one of the local villages and has been flyering locally as a volunteer, which is just so lovely. And I asked her what the local response to the festival has been, and she said it's been brilliant because it's brought employment to the area, as estates traditionally always have. It's brought life and soul and fun, a sense of fun. It brings in visitors, which obviously boosts all aspects of the local economy, from local places where people stay and local restaurants through to local taxi drivers, like you mentioned. And so it's really interesting. We've talked in the past about how an estate is often run like sort of a kingdom within our national kingdom, and sort of it has all aspects of, you know, a local economy to take into account, different people from different backgrounds all involved. And it's lovely to see that modeled at Neville Holt as a sort of miniature sort of economy within Britain, where they bringing in local as well as full-time employment, volunteers, and so many other things. And I think it's a great testament to families like Carl's that they give back when they've been blessed. And that's traditionally always been the case with so many custodians of great houses, is the concept of noblesse oblige, of having an obligation to to give back to the local community as well as to the country. And Carl's family have modeled that better than almost anyone I know. It's interesting, Ben, you asked earlier about the history of Neville Holt, you know, the Cunard family who lived at Neville Holt before it became a school, but also well known for their patronage of the arts as well as their philanthropy. And it's lovely to see how, as the residents of the Neville family had their own forms of philanthropy through the centuries, and it's lovely to see how the owners of the house has changed, but that concept of noblesse oblige, that concept of giving back to society has continued under the Ross family.
Absolutely. And this is unique. It's uniquely English event, and it's an event intrinsically linked to the culture of the country house. And, you know, for us, obviously, at the Country House podcast, that's fantastic. And Carl, your family have kindly given our listeners a discount for tickets, which is we're really grateful for. Could you tell us a bit more about that, perhaps?
Yeah, well, we're big fans of the Country House podcast here at Neville Holt Festival. And we wanted to give back, and we want to see you all there. We're very much looking forward to having you. I know, Jeff, you're coming for a few of the events. CHP15, all in capital, will give you 15% off. It'll run for 2 weeks from Tuesday, 23rd of April. We'd love to see you there. We'd love to meet you. And that NevilleHoltFestival.com.
Gosh, thank you. We'll put that in the description too, so that people can use that. And yeah, as I said, it's a uniquely English event tied to the country house. So I would definitely encourage people to go. I'm hoping that I can come and catch some of it too. But we're grateful for you coming on, Carl, and grateful for your time and sharing your insights with us as an insider on running and hosting these festivals. And again, CHP15 for 15% off. That'll run for 2 weeks. And thank you all for listening. One final thing before we end the episode, a small note from Connor.
Yes, thanks, Ben. After a most enjoyable 5 months, I've made the decision to bid farewell to the Country House podcast. It's been a pleasure building this platform alongside Ben and Jeff. I've cherished our discussions on country houses, their traditions, and all they represent. And to you, our listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. Your support has been invaluable, and for that, I am profoundly grateful. To Ben and Jeff, chaps, I wish you every success in the future. Thank you very much.
Join us next week, and goodbye.